From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the State Theater in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Minneapolis. It is great to be back here in Minnesota, which is the petri dish in which public radio greatness grows like a mole. We've got a great show for you today. Explorer Anne Bancroft will be here to talk about her expeditions to the North and the South Poles. Perhaps being a Minnesotan, she just wanted to warm up. But first, history was made this week with a tennis match that lasted over 11 hours, played over 3 days. By the third day, the entire world was watching. It made us realize we have underestimated your attention span. So in today's day-long edition of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Carl is going to do every quote ever uttered. Carl, want to get started?
Let there be light.
You know, on second thought, maybe just this week's news will be epic enough. So give us a call and play our games. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time now to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, Peter and Carl. My name is Amanda Cosme, and I'm from Waldorf, Maryland.
Well, Amanda, delighted to hear from you. You sound like you're in a good mood.
Hello, Amanda.
I'm very nervous.
Oh, don't be nervous. Don't be nervous. What do you do there? You said in Waldorf, Maryland?
In Waldorf, Maryland. Yep, it's right south of Washington, D.C.,
right.
And I'm a student in library science.
Oh, okay.
You're a librarian.
You're a larval librarian.
Exactly.
Librarians are cool. We like librarians. Well, welcome to the show, Amanda. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a television personality and a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning. Mr. Mo Rocca is right here.
Hi, Amanda. I love your salad.
Next, say hello to a deputy editor and a blogger for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Kiri.
Hi, Amanda.
And finally, a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, Mr. Adam Felber, right here.
Hi, Adam.
Hey, Amanda.
Amanda, welcome to the show. You're going to start us off with a new game, one we're calling...
See Me After Class.
It's kind of enticing, isn't it, when Carl says it? This week, we saw a lot of newsmakers get into a lot of trouble, and the world being what it is, people don't always get the punishment they deserve. That's where Carl comes in. He's going to tell you what sentence each of these people is going to have to write 100 times on his blackboard. You tell us who the delinquent newsmaker is. 2 times out of 3, you'll win our prize, Carl's voice on your voicemail. Ready to play?
I am very much ready to play.
Okay, Carl, what does the first malefactor have to write 100 times on the blackboard?
I will never again in any way disparage my civilian superiors, including Vice President Bite Me. Oh, darn it, I did it again.
That was somebody who lost his job because he and his aide said unpleasant things about the vice president and other civilian officials. Who was it?
That's got to be Blabbermouth Stanley McChrystal.
That's true. As a 4-star general, there were only about 3 people in the world who could fire him, and he talked smack about all of them. He and his staff were probably just one Bud Light Lime away from dissing Sasha and Malia Obama. The worst offense of General McChrystal and his staff was their disparaging remarks about Vice President Biden, who they referred to as Vice President Bite Me. But if making fun of Biden is now a firing offense, our unemployment rate is going to shoot up to 90%.
Is Bite Me the best they could have done?
Honestly, well, come on.
He does have quite a set of choppers on him, though.
Well, then Biten, maybe.
Yeah.
Biten, B-I-T-I-N. I'll take that.
That was the Bud Light Lime talking, I'm afraid. Yeah.
Biden is time there.
Biden. Yeah.
I haven't seen him in a while. He's Vice President Hayden. You know, it seems like you could do better than Bite Me.
Adam, how'd your comedy night with 101st Airborne go? I've been meaning to ask you.
No, they love me.
I bet.
Yeah.
General David Petraeus, as I'm sure you know, was appointed to take over the command in Afghanistan. It's a really good thing he did. Not only is he really the one person capable of the job, but if he had said no, Obama would have had to then choose from Joe Biden's list of suggestions for the job, which was Sergeant Pepper, Colonel Sanders, and General Electric.
I mean, what if, you know... Rolling Stone, this is a big comeback for them because they were always sort of very edgy right in the past.
And yes.
Now they're the magazine of Justin Bieber, and you know, and Bieber doesn't. We have Bieber fans here, but
yeah.
But Bieber wouldn't have made a mistake like that.
No.
No, Bieber's got discipline, and his team does too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's Bieber. Look, Bieber fever can take you, but it never takes you that far. Doesn't make you crazy.
Carl, I see somebody else has come into detention. What does he have to write on the chalkboard?
I will never again leave the scene of a disaster my company caused for a yacht race, unless it is a really good yacht race.
So that was the head of what infamous company who decided that what he really needed to relieve his stress was to take in a yacht race?
Oh, that's got to be Tony Hayward from BP.
Yes, exactly right. You know his name. He's the CEO of BP. He's the guy who famously complained about, quote, wanting his life back after his company turned the Gulf of Mexico into an enormous Jiffy Lube. He decided to relax by attending a yacht race in Britain. When asked how he could do such a thing, he said, well, if you want to talk about witnessing disasters, my yacht came in fourth. After the yacht race, Hayward said he'd soon be back on the scene managing things in the Gulf right after the International Convention of Monocle Wearers. He has to lead an ascot symposium there, and he's going to participate in the annual butler toss.
An ascot.
Hayward.
Carl, I notice someone else, some last person coming into detention. What does he have to write on the wall?
I will never again call them sissies. As long as those sissies keep winning.
That could have been any one of a number of millions of Americans who are now, thanks to a U.S. victory, loyal fans of what?
Oh. Okay, hang on.
Well, let me give you a... The U.S. hasn't won anything for a long time. So just this week, we finally pulled one out. What?
Well, we got to the next level of the World Cup.
Exactly right. Soccer. We're all soccer fans now. For years, Americans have denigrated soccer as being too foreign and too dull and featuring too many players who are better than we are. But since the U.S.'s last-minute thrilling win or go-home victory over Algeria on Wednesday, suddenly everybody you know is a soccer fan. Americans are learning the subtleties of the beautiful game. For the first time, they're also learning that there are other countries in the world, like Ghana and Algeria, without having to invade them. And Americans have been amazed to see in their TVs that it is possible for human beings to rapidly propel themselves to and fro using only the hands at the end of their legs. It's like funny, they zip around, but I can't see the motorized chair. How are they doing it? Have you guys been watching the soccer?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, it's been great.
With the sound down, but I've been watching it.
Yeah. I know.
Those horns. Those
vuvuzelas.
Yeah.
It's also the goal. That sound is really loud.
You wish they'd be more restrained about it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, they only do it like twice a game.
I know. It's not like it happens
much. Carl, how did Amanda do in our quiz?
Amanda, you were magnificent. Three correct answers, so I'll be doing the message for your home answering machine, cell phone, or whatever you have.
Well done. Thank you so much, Amanda, for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Kiri, Representative Joe Barton of Texas became famous last week when he apologized to BP. Mm-hmm. Well, he does have ties, though, to the oil industry. It turns out he's a defender of the environment. He says we should take efforts to conserve what because it is a finite resource?
Not oil, because we know that's not a finite resource.
Absolutely not. God just makes more of it.
Mm-hmm. Something else? It's something...
Well, it's not a finite resource. This blows.
Ooh, blows.
Oh, gosh. Ooh.
So the wind?
The wind, yes.
Oh!
Cautioning us against relying on that fickle alternative source of energy. Representative Barton, who has received almost $2 million from the oil and gas industry since 1990, explained his theory this way. See if you can understand it. Quote, wind is God's way of balancing heat. Wind is the way you shift heat from areas where it's hotter to areas where it's cooler. Oh. Wouldn't it be ironic if, in the interest of global warming, we mandated massive switches to energy, which is a finite resource, which slows the winds down, which causes the temperature to go up, unquote?
But wait, then that would make, no. in Joe Barton's science, wouldn't that make it windier then?
No, the idea is that windmills block the wind. So then they slow down the wind, and then I say, you know, there's no more wind.
My boy can't fly a kite.
Right. That's why I have to be careful of those windmills.
Daddy, what was it like when the air moved?
Exactly.
Against the wind. A little something against the wind. Well, I found myself seeking shelter.
Thank you, everybody. Now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Deal Affair from Brooklyn, New York.
Hey, Deal, how are things in Brooklyn?
Hot.
Yes, they always are one way or another. What do you do there?
I'm a grad student in social work.
Social work, okay, that's a lovely thing. You're going to spend your life helping others?
Yeah. And not making much doing it.
Yeah. How long do you think it'll take before you just get tired of their whining?
Ooh, I'm already tired of their whining.
There you are. It's nice to have you with us, Deola. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. What is the topic, Carl?
Don't you know who I am? I'm Carl Castle, damn it!
Celebrities are just so entitled. They just assume that because they got to do their rehab at Promises in Malibu, the world owes them something. Well, this week, we read about a star who got busted for abusing that star power. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about famous folk paying the price for privilege. Choose the true story. You'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Sure.
All right. First, let's hear from Adam Felber.
The Carvel Ice Cream Company thought they had their 75th anniversary celebration all figured out. Step one, issue 75 black cards to A-list celebrities entitling them to free ice cream forever. Step two, enjoy the publicity that comes with stars occasionally enjoying their product. What Carvel didn't count on was step three, being driven towards bankruptcy thanks to one black card holder's ravenous appetite for ice cream. As a result, last week, Carvel was forced to actually revoke the black card of one Ms. Lindsay Lohan. Yes, you wouldn't think that ice cream would be Ms. Lohan's thing due to the fact that it's so famously high in sugar and low in alcohol. But apparently the entire Lohan clan has been, quote, abusing the card. And Carvel says, quote, after more than 6 months of numerous and large orders for ice cream, we finally had to cut off the card. But before we break out the high-tech dairy-detecting ankle bracelets, let's be fair. Because the really insatiable cookie puss in the story appears to be Lindsay's mom. That's right, Dina Fudgy Lohan, who actually called the police after her card was revoked, apparently invoking their sworn duty to soft serve and protect.
All right. Lindsay Lohan abusing her free ice cream privileges and having Carvel revoke them. Your next story of celebrity egos gone wild comes from Kiri O'Connor.
It was a PR smackdown even a smoking hot werewolf and vampire couldn't fix. Gossip websites were blowing up this week with rumors that U.S. Supreme Court nominee and noted twihard Elena Kagan had, through her office, requested a ticket to the Los Angeles premiere this week of Twilight Eclipse and was rejected on the grounds that she was not important enough. Kagan, who has been seen power walking in Central Park in a Team Jacob sweatshirt, was said to be crushed. Asked about the epic diss, star Kristen Stewart mumbled, "I don't know who that lady is. Is she like the one with the talk show?" Meanwhile, the PR team scrambled. "Look, the director and one of the stars are from England, and the other two stars are from California. They can't be expected to know anything," said spokeswoman Jennifer Kress. Meanwhile, fellow New Yorker Lady Gaga showed some badly needed class. She sent Kagan a silver spoon, inviting her over for an evening of True Blood and eating Ben and Jerry's right out of the carton.
Supreme Court nominee Elena Kagan tries to use her sway to get into the Twilight premiere and fails. Your last story about famous people disappointing their fans comes from Mo Rocca.
Residents of Cabot Cove, Maine, have had it with Angela Lansbury. The picturesque town, of course, was the setting for the TV series Murder, She Wrote. Since the series' own death in 1996, Lansbury has become a frequent vacationer and, many say, a nuisance. After spending 3 weeks last summer in her TV house, now a bed and breakfast, she refused to pay her bills. "This is my house," she told the innkeeper. Twice she's been cited for bicycle DUI, and once for lewd conduct with a lobster. Dr. Seth Hazlitt treated her for a jet ski-related accident, another bill that went unpaid. Quote, "She wasn't just rude, she accused me of murder. She accuses everyone she doesn't like of murder." Quote, "Angela feels like she made this town what it is," says beauty parlor owner Loretta Spiegel. "Nonsense. Murder, She Wrote made Cabot Cove look like a killing field. Someone getting murdered every week. She's done enough damage."
All right, then. Diola, here are your choices. From Adam Felber, the story of how Lindsay Lohan also couldn't stay away from Carnival ice cream and got her privileges revoked. From Kerry O'Connor, how Elena Kagan tried to use her status as a Supreme Court nominee to get into the big Twilight movie premiere. Or from Mo Rocca, how Angela Lansbury is no longer welcome in the main town she put on the map with Murder, She Wrote. Which of these is the real story of a celebrity going a bit too far?
Oh, gosh. Okay,
Number three, she guessed.
Come on.
No,
come on,
I'm sorry. I'm going to go on a limb and go with number two.
You're going to go with number two. You're going to go with the second story. That was the story of Elena Kagan and her desire to see the Twilight movie. All right, then, that's your choice. That was Kiri's story. Well, this is exciting. This was picked up by E! News, this story. Here's their report.
Long Island police were called to the scene of a famous ice cream store when Lilo's mom tried to cash in on her daughter's freebie.
I hate when they steal our theme music.
It's terrible, yeah. Isn't it? So as you've no doubt figured out, that, in fact, Adam's story about Lindsay Lohan and her ice cream is the true story, so you didn't win our prize, but you did win for Kiri for her frighteningly realistic story of Elena Kagan being a Twilight fan. Kiri, is Elena Kagan a Twilight fan? Did you make that up, too?
I totally made it up.
Totally made that up.
Well, thank you.
So thank you so much for playing, Dola. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And now the game where we invite people who have accomplished great things to accomplish a sort of okay thing by playing a game we call Not My Job. Our guest is one of the preeminent polar explorers of our day. She is the first woman ever to cross the ice of the North Pole. She led the first American woman's east-to-west crossing of Greenland. And with fellow explorer Liv Arneson, she's one of the first women to sail and ski across the Antarctic landmass. We say, Shackleton who? Explorer Anne Bancroft, we are delighted to welcome you to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great to have you. So you grew up here in Minnesota, in rural Minnesota, right?
Yeah. No, I'm a St. Paul kid.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. And Minnesota wasn't cold enough for you? Is that what it was?
Well, it was good training.
Good training, right. I mean, how did you get your start? What made you think to yourself, I want to go to a trackless Arctic wasteland now?
Well, my first expedition was at about the age of eight, in the backyard.
Really? So you're one of those kids who's like, you know, well, where's Anne? Oh, she's out backyard. She says she's exploring the South Pole. Isn't that cute?
That's what it was.
But, you know, my kids always come in after half an hour for a sandwich. You never did, right?
Well, I'm sort of a strange bird.
Wow, like oh my gosh, Anne is out there killing and eating a squirrel on her own.
You don't have to make her lunch.
No. So were you, I mean, were you a strange kid? Did you really want to do this from an early age?
I didn't. It was that guy Shackleton.
Really? So you read about the great polar explorers?
Yeah, I saw those pictures, and they were playing that soccer game, you know, out on the
ice. Oh, famously, yeah, on the ice.
That's exactly what it was, and I thought, I want to be there.
So when did you make your first expedition to one of the poles?
Well, my North Pole expedition was 1986.
Okay, 1980. And
with seven men and 49 male dogs.
Seven men, 49 male dogs.
Awkward.
And you.
Awkward. And me.
And, all right. And not to rely too much on cliche, but did they bring you so in case they got lost, someone would ask for directions? I mean,
kind of like that, yes.
Well, what was your job, though? Because I'm assuming that, you know, these expeditions are expensive. You don't want to bring tourists. You want to bring somebody who can do a job. What was your role?
Well, you know, to push behind the dog sled and run in front of the dog sled. That was always an interesting job.
You had to run in front of the dog sled?
Yeah, because if you go out in front of the dog sled, then the dogs get really excited because they want to actually catch you.
Wait a minute. So your job was to be basically bait.
Yes.
All right, so you're out there for the first time. You were running in front of these dogs chasing you across. This is the North Pole, the South Pole. North Pole. And you say to yourself, what? This is great. I love this.
I'm going to do this again.
Really? And quite seriously, what about it was great?
You know, it's just such a variety of things. It's the camaraderie of your team members, and I guess the honest answer is that when you come home, you forget, and then you want to go again. Mm. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah.
It doesn't make me want to do it myself.
Well, I haven't been great at recruiting people.
Apparently not. Oh, yeah, you should come do this because eventually you'll forget how miserable it was. Sign here.
And you'll believe you liked it.
Yeah.
It's way north of Stockholm Syndrome.
I wanted to ask you about one last thing, which is that something you've talked about, which we're quite fascinated by, is the third man syndrome.
Oh, yeah. It's just sort of when you're out in these white places for a long period of time, you know, you have a lot of sensory deprivation. So there's that element. And then there's also this element of some people would describe it as spirits or a presence that appears when things are very difficult, physically and emotionally, you know, when you're really putting out. And so the third man aura is sort of it's sort of an appearance.
Is it right. Is it the abominable snowman?
It's, you know, Yeti.
Sorry.
One of the things I know about polar exploration is that it's actually become a tourist destination. People fly to the North Pole, or they just get there in a day, and then they fly away. And the South Pole, I'm told, has a Starbucks somewhere, somewhere in Antarctica. Does that diminish?
I haven't found it yet.
Really? Yeah, you're looking.
See, there's
now.
More to explore.
There you go. We shan't come back until we find the venti latte. Yeah. Does that diminish in any way what you want to do out there, knowing that it's so easy to get to? Does it make it harder for you to take the effort to get there the way you want to go?
Well, it doesn't diminish it, because we're just doing it so differently. I mean, we start from the edge of the continent and we pull a sled that's twice our body weight, and we come in from the interior. So we do come to a base at the South Pole.
Right.
And then we keep on going. So it's, what I end up feeling is what those early explorers felt like a little bit.
Right.
Because we are so isolated. And if something really did happen, in all seriousness, you can't just call up and say, come get me.
You can't?
Well, you can, but they can't always get you.
Mm. Oh, really?
There's a hitch in that. You can now call.
Well, they can't sail there anymore.
They might not find you. You know?
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and they can't sail there anymore because the hippies used up all the wind.
Right.
That's right.
Anne Bancroft, we're delighted that you're here with us, and we've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
You're going to need a bigger boat.
It was 35 years ago this week that the movie Jaws came out, scaring everybody out of the water and changing the course of movie history. But it also created a whole new genre of film, really bad shark movies. We're going to ask you three questions about the bad legacy of a great film. If you get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice in their home answering machine. Carl, who is Explorer Anne Bancroft playing for?
Peter, she is playing for Christy Brandt of Minneapolis.
There you are. All right.
Hang in there, Christy.
Here we go. And here's your first question. Many of the movies made to exploit the success of the original Jaws, of course, had the word Jaws in the title, such as which of these real movies? A, Air Jaws 2, Even Higher. B, Schindler's Jaws. Or C, Jaws, 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 Jaws.
I'll go with C.
You're going to go with C, Jaws, 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 Jaws.
Yeah.
Presumably followed by its sequel, Jaws, 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 Jaws. It was actually A, it was Air Jaws 2 Even Higher. Air Jaws 2 Even Higher was a sequel to the television documentary Air Jaws, which is about the great white sharks of South Africa. Apparently they like to jump in the air. So you have two more questions. You can get these both right and win. Here
pressure.
We go. What is the plot of the great film Malibu Shark Attack? Malibu Shark Attack was about one of these. A, an underwater earthquake that releases horrible prehistoric goblin sharks on the coast of Malibu. B, an evil scientist who combines the DNA of sharks and bikini models, who then rebel. Or C, a scorned actress is reincarnated as a shark and has bloody vengeance on all who have wronged her.
C.
You're going to go for the actress shark.
Oh, I don't like your face.
All right, I haven't said it yet.
I really
until
like
I say
B.
The letter. You like B.
I like A so much.
A is right. Congratulations.
I wish you were my teacher in
school. Know.
Wait, I'm sorry. Is this how you found the North Pole eventually?
Nobody was there. Who knew?
No, the idea is that the underwater earthquake releases the horrible goblin sharks, and then this is the cool part, a tsunami washes the sharks into inland Malibu, so they can just go nuts. It's very exciting. All right, this is your last question. Get this one right, you win it all.
Oh.
Which of these is a real shark movie? You can get the DVD of A, Teen Shark, B, Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus, or C, Monster Sharks from Alpha Centauri.
It is B.
They're unanimous in their B-dom. Are you saying B?
Yeah.
Yes, you're right. You can see the trailer online, Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus. The shark in this 2009 movie is so mega, it actually leaps up and bites the Golden Gate Bridge, which is impressive for a shark. Carl, how did Anne Bancroft do on our quiz?
Peter, we made a discovery ourselves. She can play this game.
She can.
Two correct answers, so Anne Bancroft wins for Christy Brandt.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Anne Bancroft is one of the world's greatest polar explorers. She's founder of the Anne Bancroft Foundation. Anne Bancroft, thank you so much for joining us today. Great to have you. Anne Bancroft, ladies and gentlemen, Minnesota's own. And in just a minute, inspired by all this talk of adventuring, Carl mounts an expedition to climb Mount Kilimanjaro in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. But right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Mark Kirk is a congressman. He's now running for President Obama's old Senate seat in Illinois. He's run into trouble over statements he's made about his military and even his teaching experience that have turned out not to be true. This week, though, he hit upon a successful strategy for dealing with tough questions from the press. What did he do?
He had his voice box removed.
That'll show him.
What did he do? He pretended tough questions. Oh, he now speaks a new language? I don't know.
No.
What could he do? Can you give me a clue?
Well, he got this idea during a screening of the classical movie Chariots of Fire.
Oh, he just runs away now.
He ran away, yes. He ran away. That's his tactic.
In slow motion.
Yeah.
After Mark Kirk claimed military honors and missions he didn't actually earn or do, the New York Times revealed that he also lied about, of all things, being a nursery school teacher.
Yeah. Mm.
So reporters were waiting for him after a speech in downtown Chicago. He gets off the stage. He sees the reporters. They start shouting questions. And he turns and he runs. And they chase him. And they continue to shout their questions. And he keeps running through the kitchen into an SUV, which peeled out.
Oh, my God.
Oh, so he had it set up as a getaway car, too.
Yes, yeah. He did.
He knew he was sprinting.
And then helicopters, right. And did all the cable news channels switch to this now?
They did. Yeah. It was like, you know, chase during the streets of Chicago.
The reporter should have seen it coming. Yeah. He was wearing shorts.
Spikes.
Yeah.
Kirk,
stretching
though,
during his day.
Exactly. Limbering up. Kirk, though, being Kirk, then claimed he had won a gold medal in the Olympic 100-meter sprint. Adam, listen to this description from Carl.
If it's an Italian, he will roll over 3 or 4 times. The Russians, they will go down with a thud and lay there, spread-eagled, looking to the sky. The French will look up with innocent anguish. The English are more sturdy about it.
Carl was describing the various international techniques of doing what?
Feigning injury in the World Cup.
Exactly, or, right. Yes. Diving.
Boy, that's annoying.
Yes.
Nobody's better than the Italians at that.
Oh, well, you'd think. Carl was quoting one Frank Delaney. He's an author and soccer fan. He was speaking on Weekend Edition. And Mr. Delaney was describing the various ways soccer players hit the turf, overacting like it's a high school production of Our Town in an effort to draw a penalty against their opponent. The Italians, as you say, are claimed as some of the most theatrical divers. They were eliminated Thursday. That's good. They can now focus on their acting careers. Alessandro Nesta, for example, has achieved fame for his one-man show, Ow, You Almost Touched Me.
He also did that great, give me a minute and I'll decide what part is hurt.
Yes, he can do that. What I love is that because it's true, when they draw a penalty against the other guy and they get a penalty kick, they get up and they forget to limp.
Right.
You know, some guy will be lying on the ground and go, oh, he gouged out my eyes! You know, screaming, and they give the yellow card to the guy, and he pops up, and he sort of happily walks back and kicks the ball.
Well, European healthcare is very good.
Exactly.
Right on there, right on the spot.
I was murdered, I tell you.
Murdered.
Got better.
Mo, BP has had a lot of terrible press lately because they are terrible. But one journalist is doing some enterprise reporting about how the Gulf oil disaster is in fact a boon for business there. Who does this journalist work for?
Well, I mean, it's obviously... I mean, it's going to be... It's BP.
Yes, it's BP.
Yeah.
The article appears in the magazine Planet BP, published by BP. Quote, the region's businesses, particularly the hotels, have been prospering because so many people have come here from BP and other oil emergency response teams.
They should change the name of that magazine quick.
We
cover everything.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Matt Silbernagel from Sun Prairie, Wisconsin.
Sun Prairie, Wisconsin.
Indeed.
And do you feel a rivalry with Minnesota being from Wisconsin?
Well, I was a Vikings fan.
Yeah.
And then Brett Favre came to Green Bay, and I became a Packers fan.
Yeah.
And then Brett Favre went to Minnesota, and now I'm just confused.
I can imagine. Well, welcome to our show, Matt. Carl Castle is now going to read you 3 news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on 2 of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Ready to play?
I'm nervous, but ready.
All right. Here is your first limerick.
California is broke as a state. So new income we try to create. Soon DMV tags have room for some ads. We'll make billboards of your license
plate.
Right. The increasingly desperate lawmakers in bankrupt California are considering a bill allowing for electronic license plates. They'd flash between, you know, standard identifying numbers and letters, and ads. You know, they're like these new electronic billboards. It would bring in revenue, but think of what it might do to police chases. It's like, one Adam 12, we're in pursuit of a white van, license plate E68. If it lasts more than 4 hours, call your doctor F6.
I would be distracted by that. That would completely distract me from my texting.
Here's your next limerick.
Most meetings I go to aren't so hot. They require some nodding, but no thought. A machine with a face could go take my place. I'll stay home and send in a...
robot.
Yes, a robot. Are you tired of wasting your time in meetings? Would you rather spend your time watching lolcat videos or reading about your new favorite sport, soccer? A Japanese company, Innovation Matrix, has developed a robot surrogate to attend business meetings in your place. It's got cameras, microphones, so it can speak and see for you. It's amazing how closely this man-sized robot approximates human behavior. For example, just this week, one of these robot surrogates was reprimanded for sexually harassing the fax machine.
Faxes are so old.
Yeah,
that would be harassment and elder abuse.
What can I say? I had a thing for older technology.
Harassing my telex.
It was seen tucking up as electric.
I don't think you're obsolete. Anyway. All right, very good. Here's your last limerick.
With fringes and hair curls, who knew? I'm arrested 'cause I had no clue. I saw a prayer shawl and then started a brawl. I was duped 'cause he looked like a...
rhymes with zoo.
No.
Stew?
No. No, it's a tough one. I'll give it to you because I think you've already won. It's Jew. He's duped because he looked like a Jew. The mayor of Amsterdam's plan to clean up the streets of Amsterdam is Meshuggah. Meshuggah like a fox. They've been having trouble with anti-Semitic gangs, right? So police officers are going to be trained to become decoy Jews. They'll learn to complain colorfully about trivial annoyances and to loudly worry that their children may not choose to become physicians. So these thugs will be lured out, and then the decoy Jews transform and let them have it. Yarmulkes turn into razor-sharp flying discs. Kazing! The main challenge so far has been casting convincing decoy Jews. You know, for example, Samuel L. Jackson, a great actor, but no one really bought his "I've had it with these misogashing snakes on this fakakta plane."
You know what would be funny? It would be the school where they all learn that. To listen to an entire class of policemen taking the instruction there.
It's like, everybody together. Yes, I'm watching my salt.
Do you have to put me right next to the air conditioning?
Anyway, Carl, how did Matt do in our quiz?
Matt did well enough, Peter. He had two correct answers, so Matt, you win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations.
I'm a happy guy. Thank you.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Kerry O'Connor has the lead, Peter. She has 4 points. Adam Felber has 3. Mo Rocca has 2.
Mm. All right. Mm.
We should all tie in honor of the World Cup.
There you are.
Yeah.
Here we go. Mo, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. The federal judge who overturned the Obama administration's moratorium on blanking refused to stay his decision pending appeal.
Offshore drilling.
Right. New regulations from the Iowa Department of Public Health will ban the words light, mild, and low tar from blank packages.
cigarette.
Right. Speaking to reporters on Thursday, President Obama and blank said they had reset relations between the U.S. and Russia.
President Medvedev.
Yes, over a hamburger they did it. In an 18-minute ordeal during which he lost sensation in his feet, a 10-year-old California boy set a world record by blanking.
Holding his pee?
No. For only 18 minutes, that would be a record? No.
Oh, 18 minutes. I think you said hours.
He set the world record by wearing 215 pairs of underwear at the same time. After years as a playboy, Prince Albert of Blank announced he was getting married.
Monaco.
Right. Apple's launch Thursday of the new Blank drew huge crowds worldwide.
iPhone.
Right. Two salesmen from Syracuse, New York have been charged with reckless endangerment of property after a Blank went bad.
A lawnmower demonstration.
Close. A vacuum cleaner demonstration.
Oh.
Did you know they do that?
That's a lawnmower is a vacuum cleaner for grass.
Remind me never to invite you to clean my house. You know what they do? They come in and they spill the ashtray and they dump the potted plant and they tear up the pillow.
Do
and
they still do that?
Apparently, and when the policemen showed up at the complaining woman's house, they were desperately trying to repair the damage they'd done to this woman's mattress. But they were arrested. Carl, how did Mo do?
Mo had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points and Mo has the lead.
All right then. Next up is Adam Felber. Fill in the blank, Adam. The man accused of trying to detonate a bomb in blank pled guilty this week.
Times Square.
Right. On Thursday, the Senate once again rejected an emergency spending package designed to provide help to people without blank.
Jobs.
Right. On the 1-year anniversary of a secret trip to Argentina, blank disappeared one more time.
Governor Sanford.
Right. South Carolina. Crews in Arizona worked to contain blanks covering 12,000 acres.
Fires.
Yes, indeed. A New Zealand man who was driving drunk and overturned his car was found by police blanking in the upside-down vehicle.
Drinking.
Yes, he was having another beer. Edith Shane, the nurse who was photographed blanking a sailor in an iconic World War II photo, died at age 91.
Kissing.
Right. A class of 7th graders analyzing photographs discovered a mysterious cave on the surface of blank.
Mars.
Right. In the midst of yet another losing season, the Pittsburgh Pirates finally fired blank.
Their manager.
No, their pierogi mascot.
Of course.
Some say the huge human-sized dumpling, best known for his racing prowess in the field, should have known better than to diss his employer on his Facebook page. With hours of complaining about
his bosses.
But
he'd been followed around by Rolling Stone for so long. Something had to slip.
the dumpling was out in the street. He faced a future in the minors, perhaps as a racing hot dog for the Washington Wild Things. Thankfully, though, cooler heads prevailed, and the pierogi was rehired because they didn't want to see their little dumpling get burned. Carl, how did Adam do in our quiz?
Adam had a great round, Peter. He had 7 correct answers for 14 more points. Adam now
All
has
right.
17 points and
Way
the lead.
To do it. All right. How many then does Kiri need to win?
7 correct answers.
All right.
Oh.
This is for the game, Kiri. After 11 hours, John Isner finally beat Nicholas Mahut in what was the longest blank on record?
Tennis match.
Right. Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions told Politico that Republicans may boycott next week's confirmation hearings for blank.
Elena Kagan.
Right. Because the government tax credits expired at the end of April, blank sales plummeted to a record low in May.
Housing.
Right. A man in Florida had to be rescued by the Coast Guard when he was discovered blanking.
He was discovered, I have no idea. He was discovered walking on water.
No, he was discovered sleeping on water on his pool float about a mile offshore. Thousands of fans lined a 2-mile parade route to cheer for this year's NBA champions, the blank.
Oh, the Lakers.
Of L.A. After a power outage during his taping, ABC late night host blank recorded Wednesday's show on a laptop webcam.
Oh, that man Jimmy Kimmel.
Right. Ireland's Evening Herald newspaper wins this week's award for the best headline with blank.
I don't even have anything funny to say.
The winning headline for the best of the week competition was, woman in sumo wrestler suit assaulted her ex-girlfriend in gay pub after she waved at man dressed as a Snickers bar. Unquote.
Do you even need an article at that point?
No, you're done.
I was supposed to know that?
Yes.
How could you not?
Carl, did Kiri do well enough to win?
She needed 7 correct answers. She had just 5.
Oh.
So with 17 points, Adam Felber is this week's champion.
Well done.
Thank you.
Well done. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, well, now that he's got a taste for it, who will President Obama fire next and why? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive Insurance with more than 30,000 local independent agents. Information is available at progressive.com. The Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, working to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. And the National Association of Realtors, providing information for those buying or selling their homes at houselogic.com/buy and sell. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our intern is Siri Belusu. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Special thanks this week to Rob Byers and to the crew at the State Theater in Minneapolis. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Shillog, Eva Waltrover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, who is President Obama going to fire next? Mr. Mo Rocca.
After reading her explosive comments criticizing his handling of the oil spill in Highlights magazine, Obama will fire his daughter, Malia.
Kiri O'Connor.
Bo the dog. He's been inappropriate with Michelle's leg.
And Adam Felber.
He'll fire Hillary Clinton for her inability to control the loose-lipped, anything-goes locker room culture of her husband.
And if President Obama fires any of those people, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks to Mo Rocca, Kiri O'Connor, Adam Felber. Thanks to Tony Ball, Tom Campbell, and everyone at Minnesota Public Radio. Thanks to this fantastic bunch of Minnesotans at the State Theater. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR.